If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
Hi, I'm Shadow Stevens. On this episode of Nostalgia Stories, WGN sister station Antenna TV spoke with Todd Rundgren. Listen as we chat with Todd about Utopia and more. What sparked your interest in music?
I was just always interested in music since I was like a zygote. I don't know whether there was some event that's in my pre-memory that I don't remember, but my earliest memories are sitting around probably at the age of three or so with a little RCA 45 player. It was a fairly common thing to have. And my parents would buy these 45s of the Boston Pops, like classical musics like Chicken Reel and the Skater's Waltz and stuff like that. And I used to just take a stack of them and put them on there and listen to the whole stack, then flip the stack over and listen to them again. And the ones that weren't in the stack, they were all colored vinyl, so I would just stare through them while I was listening to the music. And it was just a blissful time for me, so I've been into music ever since. And you realize at a certain point that you have a musical mind, that not everybody has the same kind of reaction to music or hears it the same way. So some people actually do have a mind that is, I guess, more attuned to what's happening inside of a musical event. And it became pretty apparent that I had that when I could pick melodies out without having to read music or anything like that. When I was growing up, to be a musician was kind of like a long shot thing. You know, nobody planned, most people at least didn't plan to be a musician. You planned to go to college and eventually have a desk job of some kind. But I was always terrible in school. I had no interest in what they were teaching or the way that they were teaching it. I was a constant disruption in the classroom. The only thing that I was really any good at or excelled at was music. I could pick up an instrument and immediately start picking out things on it and learning to play it. But there was no accommodation for that in school when I was growing up. There was nowhere to go with that. If you could do that, but you couldn't do the other stuff like your trigonometry homework. So for me, it was just a process of waiting for school to end, just waiting for it to be done so that I could go out and kind of take my chances as a musician. They had music programs in my elementary school, a thing that doesn't exist in very many places anymore, but they had like full-fledged music classes, singing classes, where they would teach you other things but using song form as a way to more easily convey it. And there was a program where you could rent a musical instrument for really cheap, and someone would come around every week or two and give you a lesson, and then you were expected to practice on your own. And the first instrument I thought I wanted to play was the flute, oddly enough, but I was too young, for one thing, because it requires you have to form your mouth in a certain way, and when your mouth is still evolving and stuff, it's much more difficult to do. So, and plus the flute is a non-linear kind of fingering thing on it that I couldn't immediately figure out. So my sister, she rented a clarinet but never bothered to practice it or play it or anything. She wasn't that interested in music, just thought it was a thing to do. So I started learning how to play her clarinet. And that pleased my father, because the first thing I learned was like Mr. Ackerbilt, Two Strangers on the Shore, which was, you know, an easy listening single, and he liked that. But then I heard The Ventures' Walk Don't Run on the radio. I mean, I'd heard guitar songs before and was interested to a certain degree, but when I heard Walk Don't Run, I thought, that's the instrument I want to learn how to play. So I pestered my parents until they got me essentially an acoustic guitar, and I started committing myself to that. And the reason why you know you're a guitar player, as opposed to all the people who think they're guitar players or think they want to play guitar, is that you persist no matter how badly your fingers hurt. Because most people will give up before they develop, you know, the calluses and the dexterity to play the instrument as much as they want to play it, you know. They just can't handle the pain.
How'd you stay true to yourself?
I didn't view myself necessarily in the same way, I guess, that other artists would, you know, the attitude that other artists would have about their music and how important it was for it to be successful. Because I was producing records for other people, and I was becoming quite successful at that. And so most other artists, they have this pressure to be commercial, whatever that means, at any particular time, you know, try and figure out what the audience wants and deliver what the audience would naturally go out and buy. And that kind of thing, when I'm making my own records, never occurred to me. Because I'm not a genre artist, for starters. I'm interested in all different styles of music, so I dabble around in various kinds of and styles of music. But also, I'm not worried about the economic aspect. I'm not worried about whether the record will sell. I'm only thinking about, is this something nobody has done before? That was my principal concern. My purpose in the music business is to do things that other people wouldn't naturally do. What's the point of just repeating what everybody else is doing? So the combination of being a producer and being successful at that gave, and then also being an artist, gave me the freedom to do any kind of record that I wanted, much to the chagrin of the record label. But that's why my career is what it is, why it looks the way it is, why I have fans that have been with me for 50 years. It's because it's not the same thing over and over again, and it's not attached to whatever is currently popular. It's often the exact opposite of what's currently popular, but something that might become popular in the future.
Tell us about Utopia.
The band went through a long evolution. It came together sort of organically because it was the guys who were playing on a lot of my early records. Particularly A Wizard, A True Star. It was around then that Utopia formed, partially to play music from that record and eventually to play original material. I looked at the band as an opportunity to play more guitar because in my own records I was depending more and more on the piano for compositions, and it was just a better tool for writing songs in general. And I thought, you know, I'd spent so much of my life trying to develop my guitar chops that I had to find some way to not lose that. So we started the band as a way for all of us to just play our brains out, because it was the era of what they called fusion, jazz rock fusion and prog rock and all of that stuff, where it's like very musical and sometimes very complicated and challenging to play. And it was just, you know, it was a great era, but that era passed, and the band, instead of just continuing to play that kind of music, the band sort of readapted, became smaller, became more of a pop band, and ultimately continued to put out records till about 1984, and then we retired for about 32 years, and then last year, about a year ago, we did the first and likely only Utopia official reunion tour. And that satisfied a lot of fans. A lot of fans were pestering us, you know, because they knew that all of the guys in the band were still alive, at least, and we could theoretically put it together. And while it was a challenge to do, and while we had a few surprises along the way, in the end, I think we satisfied fans' expectations, and that's the thing that I was most worried about. is that you go out and do something and they say, well, that was okay. It was fun to do and lasted just about the right amount of time. We didn't get to play anywhere outside of the U.S., but we wouldn't have been able to take the production that we were carrying anyway, and it would have been less of a show.
What's allowed you to stay current?
I run into artists all the time, young artists, you know, under the age of 30, who get tired of the music that their own generation is making and start looking for other things, ways to be more original or to distinguish themselves. And a lot of them cite records from the 70s and especially records that I've made that are much more experimental. Tame Impala is a case in point, where lonerism was supposed to be in some ways his version of A Wizard, A True Star, which was self-consciously psychedelic. And now there's this neo-psychedelic movement happening that's not the same, doesn't have the same sort of social thing behind it, you know, because it's not as if they've discovered psychedelic drugs for the first time. We were all discovering LSD and stuff like that because it was coming out of college research, and nobody had thought about taking psychedelics until Timothy Leary told us all to turn on, tune in, and drop out. So it's funny how music takes this cyclic thing, and how if you're not necessarily tied to a particular genre, it ironically ensures a longer career if you can be adaptable and if you can continue to recycle your audience in a way. I'm about to turn 71, and I have to assume that a lot of my, well, some significant number of my fans have either opted out of going to shows, but they just don't do that kind of thing anymore. They don't buy music anymore. They literally die. You know, some of the fans that might have been a little on the older end when they first discovered me in the 70s, they're gone now. So to survive in the music business, especially since the record label model has collapsed, you have to constantly seek new audience. And that means implicitly a younger audience. And fortunately, I'm making some progress in that regard. In a lot of sense, you know, the music business even isn't about music. You know, it's about personalities. I mean, my Apple News feed is always giving me stories about Cardi B, and I couldn't hum you a single Cardi B song. All I know is she's getting in a fight with somebody here. She's getting arrested for something over there. She's took an outrageous picture of herself doing this or something like that. She's got a new line of shoes out. You know, that's what being a so-called artist is today. It's the art of commercializing yourself in as many vectors as you possibly can. And music's only one of them. In fact, music may be the least important one of them in some ways.
Tell us about the relationship with your daughter.
I don't know that I would have done it unless I had already made a vow to myself about kids and parenting. Because I came from a somewhat dysfunctional family. It wasn't as if there was no affection at all there, but we really kind of, like everyone in the family, staked out territory of their own. You know, and we never kind of like fought as a family. A lot of it was because my father never had a role model in his own father. His own father was, as it turns out, something of a rogue who wound up marrying four times and not telling any of the other families what had happened. Four times simultaneously. So my dad's role model was like Jackie Gleason, the Honeymooners, a childless couple who yell at each other all the time. So, you know, that's kind of like what my upbringing was like. And I made a vow early on. You know, I said, I know I was an accident. I know my parents were not prepared for me, you know, and they were unpleasantly surprised at how I turned out. And they don't make any bones about it, you know. And so I just felt like, you know, why did you do that? Why did you have me? You know, if you didn't want me, why did you have me? And I determined that I would not make any of my children feel that way, that I would plan them ahead of time. And the biggest difference with Liv is she was not planned, but she would have wound up with the same fate, you know, just like total dysfunction. Otherwise, you know, no one who she could count on. And so that didn't seem fair. So that's why I did that. And that didn't turn out exactly the way I had hoped either, because of that big gap in the middle where we didn't hear from her for like 5 years. And it was painful, but it wasn't like I regretted doing it. You know, it wasn't her fault.
Thanks for listening. Check out other episodes of Nostalgia Stories at WGNRadio.com/AntennaTV. Or for video versions of this podcast, go to YouTube.com/AntennaTV.